You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm your host, Jocelyn Swigger. And last summer, I took time off practicing to have a baby. Maybe you can hear him. And now I'm trying to get my brain and my chops back in shape by learning the Chopin etudes. So this is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Saturday, April 9th, and I've got a cold. So forgive me if there's the occasional, you know, nose blowing and sneezing and coughing and nasality and things like that. But I wanted to tell you about a side project that I was doing this week, well, I am doing this week, that I'm pretty excited about. You know, it's really nice to get away and do something different every once in a while. So I'm going to be playing in a concert tonight a few movements from the Brahms Neues Liebeslied of waltzes, which are for piano, four hands, and chorus. And so it's been really fun to just dip my fingers into Brahms this week. It's been a really nice break, and it's really fun to play with the choir. We have a good choir and a wonderful choir director, and it's just fun to play with them. This is also my first concert in almost a year. It's my first concert since before I became a mom, and that's kind of cool. It's kind of a big deal, and it's nice that it actually is not a big deal. Like, it's not a big deal concert. It's not like I'm playing a full-length recital from memory or anything. So this is a nice way to get back into that. But I sort of figured out a couple things working on this Brahms this week that are maybe interesting. So I wanted to tell you about them. One is that I think I gave myself a little bit of a wake-up call about my practice habits. Because whether it was good or not, I actually started the Brahms kind of the weekend before. Like, last weekend is really when I started looking at it. And didn't really look at it a lot until the day before the first rehearsal. Again, not necessarily the way this should happen, but just the vicissitudes of life meant that that's the way it was. And I was actually able to get the Brahms, the few movements of the Brahms that I'm doing, from never having read through it to able to play through it for rehearsal pretty much just fine, you know, at tempo, with phrasing, musically saying pretty much what I wanted to say, occasional glitch, but really making the music and certainly ready to rehearse. Honestly, in about 3 hours of practice. And what's a wake-up call about that is that, you know, I had a graduate school roommate who always would say that work expands to fill time. And it's really true. If you give yourself 3 hours to learn something, you can do a lot in those 3 hours. And if you give yourself 3 years to learn something, you can do probably the same amount in about the 3 years. Obviously, this isn't true for every expanse of time and task. But I think I've been practicing, I mean, I know I've been practicing these Chopin etudes as though I have 2 years to learn them, which I do. And what would happen if I practiced them as though I had 3 hours to learn them? So I think I want to take my lessons that I have in 3 weeks, which are with Rebecca Pennies. I'm going to go up to Rochester and have a weekend of lessons with her on these etudes on Opus 10. I want to see if I can treat that more as a performance instead of as a lesson and really, really try and get these pieces ready to play for her. Now, that's scary, and I'm not going to be able to put in a lot more time than I have been because of teaching and Ben and just where I am in my life right now. But I want to see if I can maybe hone my focus and try to practice as though I just had a couple of hours instead of practicing as though I've got all the time in the world. So that was kind of interesting to think about that. The other thing that was interesting about that is it was good to play somebody besides Chopin. It was a really nice break, but it also really made me appreciate Chopin. Because everything that Chopin is doing in these etudes is all about what is possible for the piano and for the hands at the piano. Now, sometimes what he's doing is greatly expanding what was possible for the hands on the piano from before his time. But it's about what's possible, and I have such a feeling of faith when I play these pieces that if I can find the right way to do it, it will work, it will be comfortable, it will make sense, and it'll just feel like it fits the hand. That is so not true for Brahms. Brahms is just a really, really awkward composer, and, you know, I've talked to other instrumentalists, and everybody says the same thing. Like, nobody says, oh, when I play Brahms on the violin, it feels wonderful. Like, everybody just says, it's awkward, awkward, awkward. If you are an instrumentalist who plays Brahms on another instrument and feels great for you, please let me know, because I'd love to know somebody who thinks Brahms feels good on their instrument. But mostly, it's just really awkward. because Brahms isn't really thinking about how it's going to feel when somebody plays it. He's thinking about how he wants it to sound. And he's only thinking, I think, of how he wants it to sound. And so he has a lot of what I call Clara moments. Brahms wrote a lot of his piano music for Clara Schumann to play. She was, of course, the wife of Robert Schumann, but she also was a really, really fantastic concert pianist and had the biggest career in Europe at that time, except for Liszt. I mean, she was a really, 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 really big deal. You know, you just get the feeling in a lot of these Brahms moments that he is writing something that is hard and he goes, oh, well, Clara can do it. I'm not going to worry about it. And he's not the only composer who does this. Actually, Schumann, I think, does it sometimes too, where he'll write something hard and you just feel like, oh, he knows Clara can do it. But other composers do it too, not just the ones who actually are writing for Clara. I mean, sometimes you play somebody and you can just tell that they're thinking about the piano. This is, of course, true for Rachmaninoff and Scriabin and Beethoven, and also true for a lot of composers, contemporary composers as well. You can tell some people are just pianists. But then there are some people who just don't really care what feels good in the hand, and doesn't mean it's bad music. I love Brahms, and I love actually lots of other composers who don't do that well, but I have to say it can be really irritating to play those Clara moments. So Chopin doesn't have Clara moments. You know, everything that he writes kind of comes from the piano, and some musicologists and critics over the years have criticized him for that and have thought of him as being a less great composer than the composers who wrote wonderful symphonies, as Brahms did. He wrote four that were amazing. It's not like he wrote others that weren't amazing. He just wrote four and they're all amazing. So Chopin really only wrote for the piano because he's such a piano-centric guy, which, of course, I have to admit, I kind of like being sort of a piano-centric gal myself. Those are two of the things that I thought about while I was playing Brahms and not Chopin. So I'm going to do that concert tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun. Anyway, I have this whole new appreciation of Chopin without the Clara moments, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how some of what's tricky, I feel like he is sort of helping us find our way to it. Here's one little thought, and maybe I'm just putting too much into this to take this as a piano lesson from Chopin, but I feel like in Tenor 8, there's this really nice moment in bar 4 where he's got a mark that I take as being him saying, hey, here's how you do this. So let me sort of walk you through what's going on here. This is this one. So the right hand has the little notes, and the left hand has the melody, right? So one of the things that I'm finding quite difficult in this piece is actually not so much the right hand, because once you kind of get the right hand working out, it kind of just goes, it's not that big a deal. I mean, this one, so there's a couple spots to practice, but the right hand kind of works. But the left hand actually has some spots that you really have to get up here. And for me, this, in the heat of the moment, I tend to just miss that, this to here. I have not worked it out yet. Now, granted, I have to admit, I haven't actually practiced the left hand alone of this piece yet, which I will do this week. Gotta practice the left hand alone. But I wanted to point out this moment where I feel like Chopin is helping me a little bit. So what's hard about this is that you are jumping all around, while, of course, the right hand is doing all of this stuff. So you're jumping, and you're here, and your arm is kind of by your torso, like in the middle of the piano, and then you have to go out really fast, down here, and then come back up to the middle of the piano. So it would actually be very easy if it were just here, but it's here, here, okay? But here's how I think Chopin gave me a mark that helps. On this note, he has a sforzando, which means play this note louder. So if I'm here, and this one's louder, and then this comes back here, somehow this one being louder makes this whole motion back to here feel like this is just an aside, and it almost feels like this is one thing. And without that being louder, it feels like this is more important, and then coming back up here is harder. So I don't know if I'm explaining that well at all. This is probably something that I should do on video instead. But anyway, when I let this one be nice and loud, this feels fine. And if I don't, it feels awkward and hard to get to it. So it's almost like he's giving this as a springboard to come back to it. I feel like this is a place where Chopin can totally do it. He's writing it for himself and for his students. And he is just saying, here's something that you can make this be a little bit easier. So I wanted to play this for you. There are going to be a lot of spots where I do a little bit of screaming. Let me tell you what some of them are. One is that I actually, you know what, this is a whole theme about this piece and others this week. This piece is partly, even maybe mostly memorized. No, let's say partly memorized, because there's a lot of places where you have to look at the hand, right? There. So I'm looking at the hands, and I'm ending up being really lazy about looking at the score. And what that means is that I have not actually memorized in a careful way a lot of the places that I need to. Instead, I'm just kind of willy-nilly memorizing, getting parts of it in there. So I need to be more careful about that. But one of the spots I need to really make sure I look at is the transitions. Because three times in the piece, we have this nice fanfare. And after every one, there's a different chord that follows. So the first time, it's this one. And then it goes into another place. And then the next one, we have... I can't even find it. Oh, I'm completely missing it. Where is it? That was the first one. I have completely lost my way. Ah, there it is. Bar 23. So here's... No, sorry. Oh my God. Okay, this is my point about how I don't know my way around this piece. Wow. All right. So the first page, the first time we have the fanfare is in bar 9. And then in bar 11, we have that. And then in bar 23 is the second fanfare. This is how I see. I need to know which is which. So second fanfare is this. Goes to here. And then the third fanfare is somewhere. Okay, this is just, see, I can't find it. This is terrible. There it is. Okay, third fanfare. Oh, it's printed weirdly at the top of the page, but still I should know where it is. Is in bar 69. So, and then it goes to this chord. And then we end up going to the end of the piece. So pretty much every time I get to one of the fanfares, I don't know where I am. And then I kind of stop and scream, and it's, and I also, because I've been doing so much muscle memory for this, I actually don't even know my way around the page visually as well as I should. You know, last week I was talking big talk about how the brain processes information and learns information, and how it learns mistakes as efficiently as it learns the right thing. So I need to be really careful in my learning, and I totally was not careful in my learning this last week, and I need to be much, much better about that. Anyway, another place that is tricky that I haven't worked out yet, this is starting at around bar 52. We've got this both hands stuff going on. And they all feel a little bit different, and these are kind of fine, but then there's this thing here where the patterns keep shifting, and I just haven't worked out how they go. So here's where the hands are doing kind of a mirror image. Mirror image. Mirror image, but see, they're kind of going down and up, and I'm not sure... And now they're mirror image, and then mostly they are, and then it gets easy for a minute. So that's a spot where I tend to sort of slow down and not be sure. So I'm going to play you this. This isn't an official before version because I've been practicing this for a little bit, but boy, it sure feels like a before version. So here's 10 number 8 in its sad state. Oh my God, see, there it is. I didn't do it. See how I needed really hit that D? Let me do that again. There we go. Here comes a fanfare, and I don't know where I am, and I'm gonna go, I see it on the page, there we go. Turn the page. all quite feel the where it's black keys and white keys changes every time, and it feels a little strange. I just don't have it. This should be really fun in Broadway, and will someday, but not yet. This is the spot I was complaining about. But I love this return. Isn't that great? Here. I need to work this out. And I need to work this part out. I just haven't even figured out the fingering at all. And then, I don't have this worked out yet either, but I think it'll be fine, I hope. Sort of. Ah! Oh my god. All of the notes. Okay, so you can see that there are spots that I definitely have to work out in here that I have not yet. Well, for one thing, you know what? I need to actually circle those spots. My music is... mostly pretty naked. I've got a couple of spots marked, but not very many. So I need to be really clear about that and dig in there and get them. So that's going to be my plan for that. Okay, so 10-8, the one I just did, has mostly the little notes in the right hand and the melody in the left hand. So the next one that I wanted to show you, this is 10-12, the Revolutionary. This is kind of that upside down, where the little notes are in the left hand and the big melody is in the right hand. This is going to be my before version that I'm going to play for you. I've practiced this before in my life. I've never performed it, but this last week I just played through it once every day, so I haven't actually started practicing it. As you'll hear, there are definitely the dynamics are completely all over the place. There's a lot of places in this piece, actually, where he tells you to play really quietly, and I think that's what makes it really exciting, and I'm kind of not doing that. But I will, someday. Just like in the other one where the fanfare transitions got me, here the transitions are, let's see, basically we do this. And then we do it again, and then we go somewhere else. One time it's here, and then sometimes it's... So that's... I just don't have that clear, and I need to memorize that. Like, just sit down and really do it. First this one, then this one, then this one, then this one. So here is a before version of the Revolutionary Etude. Oh, I'm going to play some of it fast and some of it slow, just because it's fun to play the fast parts fast. And then I'll slow down when I need to. So that's how that's going to go. Thank you. turn the page, and now I'm totally lost. Here we go. That's right. These are tiny variations that I have to memorize. I need to, that wasn't quite right, but I'll work it out. So you can hear that there's lots and lots and lots of things I need to work out in there. I'm going to start actually practicing this instead of just playing through it once every day. And I'm going to do all the standard stuff. You know, I'm going to mark the hard parts and pay a little extra attention to those and try and get those transitions in there and just kind of delve into the score a bit more. So that's going to be the plan for that. So backing up a little bit. So we had the right-hand one and the left-hand one. And now here's one that's pretty much both hands equally. This is 10 number 11, which is this one. So this is one of the ones where the hands stretch, and they both do. So I'm not quite ready to play this for you, I think, but I wanted to just sort of talk to you a little bit about what I'm trying to do with it. One is I'm trying to let my hands, after doing these big stretches, just a tiny bit return to a neutral normal. So, you know, if you stretch your hand out like, stop police or something, or stop in the name of love, or jazz hands, or however you want to think about it. Anyway, if you stretch your hand out, that's a little bit the position you're going to need to do this kind of thing. But then if you let your hand close, not all the way to a fist, but in the direction of a fist, if you let it sort of close to where it naturally is, you'll see that the fingers are a little bit curved. So I need to go from the stretch back, even if I can't all the way get back to the neutral normal, I need to do a little bit of curving back in so that it's not all stretch, 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 stretch. Because if it's all stretched out, I mean, you'll see, like, just listening. Try stretching out both of your hands, like stop in the name of love. And I'm going to play two measures, and I bet your hands, if you keep your hands stretched the whole time, I bet your hands will be tired. So, okay, ready? Stretch. See? I bet your hands are tired. So now you can do stretch and then a little bit of release on every chord. So it's going to be like stretch, stretch, release, stretch, release, stretch, release, stretch, release. I can't say it, but you know what I mean. So that's not exactly the motion that you do, but I bet you'll feel that your hands are now less tired than if you just held them stretched. So when I do this, I need to let it just curve in a little bit. So that's partly about not having the thumb feel like it's stuck way out to the left in the right hand and way out to the right in the left hand. And it's also a little bit about follow through, I think. Anyway, I'm still working that out. But one thing that I've been kind of playing around with that I've been enjoying that I thought I'd show you is, you know, I said I was going to do this pretty much a measure at a time, and I mostly have been. So, you know, like, do the next one, and then. But actually, that's not all the way all of his phrasings are. He has really nice variations in the phrase lengths. So I've been playing around with trying to play his phrases, and this is mostly out of time. But I think that once I put it back in time, I think that it's going to make sense and give it actually some really nice variation. So he has these two together, and then these together, and then this by itself. Oops, sorry. There we go. That by itself. And then these by them, these together, and then this by itself. And then here's a really long one. And then by itself, these together, and then by itself, these together, and then here's a long one, and then these two together, and then these two together. Anyway, I won't play through the whole thing like that, but that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. And you can hear that some of them are easier than others, right? So I haven't quite gotten in and marked my little asterisks of where the hard ones are. I'm going to do that this week. You're seeing a theme, right? That I have not been using my pencil enough, and I've been sort of memorizing a little bit too much. It's been kind of lazy practicing that I need to be better about. And I think it also actually connects to the thing I was talking about at the beginning, where if you feel like you have all the time in the world, you can be a little bit lazy about it. But if you know you have to get this thing right in the next 15 minutes, you get it right. So I need to be better about that. Anyway, I'm enjoying experimenting with these little phrases. And I think this is going to be really fun to play. Okay, so speaking of being lazy and memorizing too fast and not thoroughly, that's exactly what I'm also doing in 10 number 10. This is one where I did not do what I said I was going to do. So this week, I will do what I say I'm going to do. So I said I was going to practice this with, this is this one. Right? Which is so fun. That's so fun to play. Oh my God, it's so fun to play. Now, I'm probably, in fact, I know that I'm not being clear enough about the 3-3-3-3. You know, 3. I need to work on that. But still, it's really fun to play. But I completely have not been practicing like I said I would, like I need to, with just the positions in the right hand. Because once I get pretty much here, as soon as it changes at all, here, I'm not sure. I can kind of do it, but I don't really know it. And then I just fall apart, which is ridiculous. So I need to actually go through this thing and practice it the less fun but more helpful way of chord positions that will totally help me, and I need to do it. And I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't do it. But you know, this is so fun. All right, I won't do that anymore. Anyway, once I get the hand positions in, then I think I can really start focusing on, you know, having it the 3 versus the 2 versus the 2 staccato. But first, I it's like I'm trying to put on my beautiful shutters and paint my building before I've even put up the scaffolding to put the foundation. I guess you don't put a foundation with scaffolding. You know what I mean? I haven't put in my rebar. I need my big steel beams and things before I build up on everything on the outside. So I need to be memorizing more carefully is, I think, a big, big theme of the week, because there's so much in this music where I have to look at my hands, and I'm tending to look at my hands but not kind of set up what's going on in my brain well. So I definitely need to be better about that. And I said I was going to start playing through just the B section of 10 number 3 this week, and I didn't. So I will this week, and I will play you a before version of 10 number 3 next week. I promise I will definitely get to that. So that's what's going on for this week. Wish me luck for my concert tonight. I think it'll be fun. And I'm going to try to do what I said I was going to do this week. That's my big plan. All right, that's it. Thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Play It Again Swig is produced in my living room. You can leave comments or questions, which I would love, and find out more at playitagainswig.com.